Welcome, everyone. You are listening to the Save Your Realty podcast. Our goal is to help you with your real estate goals. And today is our expert interview series. And we are blessed to be with Scott Shepherd with Six Stones. Scott, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, my privilege. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, good. Well, you know, Scott, I'd like to learn a little bit more about you and your organization. How long have you been with Six Stones? And how did that relationship start? And what are some of the good things that your organization is doing here in DFW?
Well, the organization is 9.5 years old, and I've been with them since day one. It was my task or assignment to go launch a coalition of churches, businesses, and nonprofits to meet the needs of the community. And we really didn't know what that meant when we started, but we also knew that it probably meant a nonprofit. Again, as I said, didn't understand what it meant, but really having the nonprofit has been the incredible vehicle or tool for collaboration more than anything. And so now it's gotten into all sorts of needs over the 9.5 years, whether it's school districts, working with our cities, collaborating with other nonprofits on special initiatives, or even working with our church partners, our faith community. So we're a little diverse in what we do, but it's because we're responding to need versus one type of project.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Well, I've gotten some questions that people have asked me either about this general area or your non-for-profit specifically that I'm not an expert on. And so we've kind of been, this list has been ever growing. And so I've got some of those questions here. Do you mind if I just start firing them away?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
You know, you spoke a little bit about, obviously, you know, your start with the organization and the work that y'all do. Can you expand a little bit specifically about what needs your, maybe the top three or four needs that you're addressing and how you engage those partners and do good in the community?
Absolutely. It really began even before we had a nonprofit. I was on church staff at First Baptist Euless here in the Mid-Cities, but we had gone down to City Hall just to see if there was something we could do to be somewhat of a good neighbor. And I think what we found was a age-old, consistent problem for every community in the United States, really, is code enforcement. And that's when the city said, we just don't have a plan. We don't have a solution. Could you maybe mobilize some volunteers? We can find some money. But we've got families that are hurting. And number one, we need to help. But number two, and they didn't really talk about it at that point, but it's about economic redevelopment. Every city's trying to figure out how to stay fresh and new and vibrant, because that's what brings jobs. That's what creates the best schools. That's what brings opportunity. And so we didn't realize what we were walking into, but that's one of the key areas we found over the course of time with one city. Now we're in, looks like going to be 9 cities this year, and the list is growing. So that's one, economic redevelopment. How do you help your local municipality with that? And then for us, it was an education, because I don't think most people realize, they assume maybe in, you know, strategic parts of Dallas or Fort Worth, or I don't want to pick on anybody, but that the needs in our school district are only in small pockets. But in the 9.5 years, we've learned, for example, in Dallas-Fort Worth, 65% of the kids in Dallas-Fort Worth, the entire metropolitan area, are on a free and reduced lunch, that they meet or fall below the poverty level.
Wow.
One of the most vibrant economies in the United States, and 65% of our kids live at or below the poverty level. It just doesn't make sense. It's almost, it almost makes you sick of your stomach to think, how does that happen in such a vibrant economy? And so that was something that broke our hearts, where we begin to lean in with the school on, you know, how do we feed kids? I'm not sure what the stat is today. A couple of years ago, the stat was 25% of the kids in Tarrant County go to bed at night wondering where their next meal will come from, or even if they'll have one. I mean, that shouldn't happen in the most prosperous nation and the most blessed community in the United States, I think, right now, economically. So that was a big deal. The other is how do you get the right tools for these kids to succeed? Because education, and you are a past educator, we were just talking about that, education is the key to breaking the cycle of poverty. Great education can lead to opportunity and college and great jobs. And so how do we support, and it starts at elementary and junior high, you know, how do you start and set these kids on a path and a trajectory that makes them successful? And so that's one of the areas. So really we've orbed in kind of those areas and just responded. What do we need to do to help our local city? And what do we need to do to help our local school district? Because they've got a list, but man, that's where the rubber really meets the road. Grassroots.
You know, I know that when I was a teacher, you know, the first school that I taught at was in a pretty, you know, pretty, you know, good area of town. You know, the houses were, you know, people had pretty good jobs and they were doing well. And there were still a lot of kids at the school that were struggling. And I think after I left, the mix changed a little bit and they became a Title I school, which I believe is 40% or more of the students receive some type of free or reduced lunch. Do you know if that's right, or does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. And so, yeah,
it's all areas.
It is all areas, Max. And that's what's crazy is you go by someplace and big cranes and new buildings, and I mean, literally right down the street, you're probably in a neighborhood that's also got poverty and struggle. Because the other thing is, I think most people look at this and think, well, you know, this certain class or structure of people, there is, and that poverty level is pretty low, or the number to get assistance and support. But what we also see, even in our community of Hirschulis and Bedford, but this translates across the entire metroplex and state, working poor, as they call it, in the state of Texas is a family of four that makes less than $48,000 a year. And so what happens is between that gap in the poverty line, which is probably around 24,000 or somewhere in that range for a family of four, is what they call the working poor. And the reason they say that is they've got a job, two jobs, three jobs. They're doing everything they can to succeed, but they don't qualify for any assistance
right.
in any form or fashion. It's like they're in this no man land. And that, even in our little burb here in the middle of the Metroplex, that's another 24% of our population.
Well, you know, when my wife was staying home with our kids and she wasn't working when she was working part-time at our church, with the number of kids we had, we were in that, and I was a teacher with a master's degree. So it doesn't surprise me that there's a lot of, you know, people like that. And I think that, I've we hadn't talked a lot, but you know, I've spent a lot of time studying economic development and you know, why some cities, you know, parts of town from the real estate side, you know, don't turn around and why some do. And I've always said, and I don't know if this is true or not, or it's been your experience, that because of that no man's land being so big, you just can't be in the no man's land very long and be able to live. And since it's such a pretty big gap from poverty to get out of no man's land, might have something to do with why it's such a challenge for people to ever leave that. Would you agree with that, or does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think about, you know, most everything in life, right, atrophies if it's not infused with energy, right? And so I think that's true. Once you've kind of fallen below that level, if you don't have something that would put energy into your family, your education, your job opportunities, your skill training, something, if something doesn't get injected into that, it's just going to continue to atrophy and get harder. Because we do know in America that most things don't, unless there's a huge downturn in the economy, things aren't getting cheaper. I mean, houses are not cheaper and cars aren't cheaper and insurance isn't. I mean, so it's almost like it's a little bit self-defeating unless we can find solutions. And I think there are solutions. I mean, I believe wholeheartedly that if we can illuminate what's going on, I think there's a bunch of people outside of that echelon of folks, let's say, they want to give and serve and help. That's at least been our experience. But you've got to educate them on that, and then you've got to give them an on-ramp and a way to do it pretty simply, because we're not all trained as social workers, but we can all do some level of social work in our community. We can all give back. And I think that's a big trend right now you see. But again, if it's not simple, it's not well thought out and planned, it's not probably going to happen.
That makes sense. Well, what are some ways for people who are listening and they've decided that it's time for them to give back and get involved in their community? What are some ways that y'all make it, you know, simple for people to, you know, contribute to make their communities better?
Absolutely. I think the first answer would be like any other nonprofit in America. I mean, anybody can contribute financially. Always need that. That's always an engine for everything, whether it's, you know, working with poor or working with, you know, new developments and selling new houses or something. But there's always a way. But I tell you what, the thing that we really love to do more than anything is to invite people to come and volunteer and experience, because we built a lot of the programs we have. We built around that need in the city of revitalization in neighborhoods, working with elderly and seniors and veterans. And so, you know, we tell people all the time, if you can slosh around a paintbrush or swing a hammer, I bet there's a way we can engage you. Matter of fact, it may be deliver lunches to volunteers, but just come put your toe in the water, in essence, and give it a try and see what happens. Because I think once you see it, experience it, and then once you see that you can actually be a part of the solution, it empowers. It's that energy that then gets infused to it. And then you start looking for other ways. How do I do more? How do I serve? Or, by the way, I know someone else, or I know an organization, or I know this platform that could help. And you bridge gaps that way. And so we love for folks to just come hang out with us and serve cities, or even the work we do with our school district. Because again, back to what we were talking a minute ago, I mean, most people do not realize that in some of the most affluent, as you said, schools or school districts, there's still free and reduced lunch, there's still poverty. And then the other thing that I think blows people away, there are homeless children, and I think in every district probably, outside of maybe Highland Park or something, but I think there's homeless students in every school district in Dallas-Fort Worth.
There's a lot of them.
Even HEB, our back. Oh, tons of
them. There's a lot of them. I remember one day specifically, I'm up on the stage at the cafeteria. We're at a junior high. I'm teaching math, and this student was in a panic because he was up on the stage doing some work that he had missed, and he was in a panic because he lost his house key. And I said, okay, well, what does it look like? And he's like, you know, it's a little card, and he showed us with his hands, and it's, you know, about 2 inches by 3 inches on it, and it's my house key. And we found it, and I'm thinking, well, that's not a house. You know, I never would call that a house key, because I've always lived in a apartment or a home, and it had a regular looking key, a metal key. And so, you know, I talked with one of the counselors there, the principal, and he's like, well, you know, he lives in a hotel. And I was like, what? You know, and I said, well, how many kids live in hotels? And I thought it was somewhere between, in some places, 3 to 10% of people are not living in a permanent housing type solution. And it's all districts. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I think it is, I use a phrase from literature here since we've been talking about education. It's like the tale of two cities. I went to a conference with the United Way a couple years ago, and they shared that even in the downturn of the economy of 08, 09, and 10, that period of time, in the previous census, the 10 years prior, Dallas-Fort Worth, actually Texas as a whole, produced twice as many jobs as the entire United States combined. So Texas produced twice as many jobs as all 49 other states did in that 10-year window of time, which you would think would be great, that we would have a lot of things worked out, there wouldn't be poverty and a lot of these issues. But the reality is, we had the jobs. So not only did you see people transplant from a lot of other areas in the United States looking for work because the economy was so bad, what you also saw are people from all over the world relocated to Texas. And so even in our district, and this is not just for Hercules Bedford in the middle of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, this is true for every, I think, school district in Dallas-Fort Worth. We have 119 nations represented in that school district because, as Dr. Buinger, the previous superintendent, used to say, Dallas-Fort Worth has become the Ellis Island of the 21st century. We are the American dream, but it takes a lot to attain this American dream. So as the economy grows and builds and gets more expensive, yes, we have jobs, but they're expensive environments to live in to have this job. And that gap is continuing to grow. I mean, I guess, right, the alternative would be you would move somewhere else where it's not as quite as expensive to live, but there may not be the jobs and opportunity too. So, you know, our success is also becoming one of our greatest detriments in Texas and in Dallas-Fort Worth. And so if you can actually, and that's why we say come volunteer, if we can take the folks that have the resources and the good jobs and that heart and put them alongside people that need just a little bit of that energy to kind of get to the next level, we can all get there. We all win in that scenario. Then you don't see this diversity or atrophy maybe in this part of the city or this part of the town, because really, you know, the old adage, it takes a village to raise a child, literally takes a village to take care of a village. And we all have a piece or a part in that. And that's really what we're trying to do as an organization, is foster that. How does everybody, and I love the phrase of our city manager, Gary McCamey, used to say, we have to give a nail for everybody to hang their hat on. The corporations, the churches, the schools, the city, the nonprofits, everybody has to have a nail and say, hey, we all won together. We either all win or eventually we're going to all lose, I think. But we've got to work together. I think that's the spirit that's kind of perking up, I think, in our communities.
Good. Well, yeah, y'all have definitely been a big factor in that. And, you know, we at our company, we enjoy contributing and, you know, time, talent, and treasure. And I know that a lot of people listening, if they haven't done this type of thing before, Six Stones provides the platform and the way that you can dip your toe in the water. And once you see the people, you know, I was spoiled because when I was a teacher, I got to see the impact of helping people on a daily basis and, you know, serving the village. And, you know, but a lot of people are in jobs right now where they don't get that kind of fulfillment or feedback. This is the type of organization that you want to plug into. Well, let me ask you just a couple more questions before we wrap up. You know, our company serves, we see a lot of folks who have some housing challenges being seniors. And some of the challenges they face are deferred maintenance on their home. They can't physically do it or they can't afford it. There's some challenges when it comes to making their home more accessible. You know, if they get a disability while they live in the home and now they're in a wheelchair or a scooter or a walker. What are some special challenges that you've seen your customers, your seniors that y'all work with, and how can they get some help in your organization?
Absolutely. Well, we were somewhat birthed out of necessity, but on the forefront, HUD has some programs that are available in a lot of the major metropolitan areas and some of the smaller communities where there is assistance to the home reinvestment program. You can go to HUD.org and look that up and see if your community or city has that. Great program. Matter of fact, they actually will support a senior, a veteran, someone that qualifies up to about $25,000, but it's typically major mechanical, roofing, and those type of things. So that's one alternative for someone that needs help. And let me say too, Max, a lot of times this is all new for folks. They've never been poor or disadvantaged or anything. They just don't know where to go. And so I appreciate you asking that question. So county's always a good resource to go to. Go to City Hall, and that's really, as I said, necessity was kind of the mother of invention on our program, is where Euless City Hall said, hey, we think we have some money. If we could mobilize local volunteers, churches, organizations, but also local contractors or folks that say, we just want to give back. We've been blessed. We want to give back. Then you can go to City Hall and say, what's available? And our program called Community Powered Revitalization, we're about 9 cities now, kind of growing, but that is a way. It's a grassroots way for a city to say, hey, I know code enforcement is a huge issue and here's an alternative and you can apply. It also escalates the way it's structured, that if it's a little more extensive and we need to talk to Tarrant County and HUD, we can do that too. So now I wish we were in every city in Dallas-Fort Worth, but those in Northeast Tarrant County and some others that are coming online, that's an availability. So it takes a little bit of an effort, I know, to go and kind of ask for charity, as they say, but you know, your cities have got, they have resources and they want to help. They really do. It's not about police and putting out fires all the time. But just having that resource to go down and kind of swallow your pride and say, hey, man, I need some help, because there's some great tools. 211, another, go to 211.org, go to just dial 211 on your phone, and you can put in a lot of resources, whether it's financial assistance, housing, food, tax preparation. That's a great alternative for folks as well.
You know, we, myself and some of my real estate partners here in the city work with the voucher programs, the different ones that are out there for people who have vouchers, whether it's a housing voucher that they can take anywhere in the city, or if it's a veteran voucher. And, you know, these counties and cities that offer these voucher programs, the waiting list is 20,000 plus people in Dallas and Fort Worth. It's a 7-year waiting list. So, you know, there for folks that have a voucher, it's, you know, sometimes they can get a good place, you know, clean, safe place to live. But I just kind of scratch my head. What are the 20,000 people doing who are on the waiting list? Where are they living?
Yeah, they're probably living right next door to the student you talked about a few minutes ago with a plastic credit card as a key. Unfortunately, I mean, and I think that's the other side, because you know this better than. And probably I do, and maybe a lot of your listeners, but, you know, when you say homelessness in the schools, what it is it's 2 and 3 families living, not necessarily under a bridge, but they're 2 and 3 families deep in a motel, or 2 and 3 families deep in a home, a rental, or maybe someone had a home and they all just kind of moved in together. So I think that's probably what we're seeing is that more of a communal, which is great, but, you know, in our backyard, when you've got 3 families living in 1,200 square feet, kind of tight. And we've seen even worse than that at times. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there are solutions. But at the same time, I think, back to what I was saying a while ago, we've had such explosive growth and a good economy and such a huge infusion of people and growth here. We're going to have to come up with some new and creative ways on housing. We really are. I mean, affordable housing is a huge issue right now for Dallas Fort Worth.
Yeah, it seems like we've noticed on the real estate side that there's a real divide between, there's just a larger percentage of people that just can't afford to buy a house at these prices. And, you know, so they're going to apartments. The rents on houses are getting very, very expensive. Another thing that some of our customers have run into is, you know, obviously the tax value of their property has gone up a lot. And even if they're a senior and it's locked in, the taxes are still going up on some of those things. And it can create some real challenges. So I haven't found anybody who's been able to solve that. I know that outside of city limits, you know, I know that people are moving into mobile homes. There's a strong demand for that versus being in an apartment. Right. You know, the cities are not friendly on those. And so the goal has just been to build more apartments. And, you know, I think it's probably better than a motel, but yeah, there definitely is, it's going to be a continued challenge. I know that you and I and a lot of other people are going to keep trying to figure out ways to solve it.
Yes. There's a lot of city for us, and we've talked to a lot of cities. We're in that whole budget cycle with cities and programming right now, or they are, and we're kind of riding along. But there's not a city that we talk to or an event that we go to where affordable housing is. I mean, that's the first phrase out of everybody's mouth. What are we going to do? I got a little article from someone at Tarrant County in the housing program there. She had been at a conference, and Lord help us if we get to this level, but the median house price in the Bay Area in San Francisco is $984,000. You know, I don't see us doing that, but it just shows you where our things have gone. It's almost gotten ridiculous. I mean, even in Dallas-Fort Worth, as you said, I mean, I think median price now is we're going to be bumping $300,000 here pretty soon. I think it's $250,000. Ulysses, they told us a couple weeks ago, home prices have gone up 44% in the last 2 years. So we love a booming economy, but yeah, it's taxing because housing prices have gone up, utility costs have gone up, insurance has gone up, rent's gone up, groceries have gone up. I mean, it's all it's tough. And so it's going to take us all to help our neighbors, to be good neighbors and to lean in. And which I think actually building that community will do more for us, even in our economy and relationships and even the success of our children. I just firmly believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Well, as we wrap up here, what is the best way that that folks can learn more about your organization, a number that they can call so they can get involved with y'all and start learning more about you and start, you know, contributing in the way that they can?
Absolutely. Real simply, you can go to our website, sixstones.org, the number sixstonesplural.org. Check out some of the things we're doing. Obviously, we're like everybody else. We've got Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. So kind of lean in and listen and look and see some of the videos and hear some of the stories. But I know you alluded to it earlier. I mean, there's some great ways for them. Just come hang out with us and serve, volunteer. It'll bless. I guarantee it'll bless you more than the folks receiving the assistance. And so we would love to invite anybody from anywhere to come and serve with us. Matter of fact, we've got a huge event in just a couple weeks, Operation Back to School. We'll support about 6,000 kiddos in HEBISD. And it's a great way to help in that distribution of supplies and meet some families and hang out with some folks. But go to the website, check it out, and our number's on there. Email us, call us. You know, however we can serve, we would love to serve.
Wonderful. Well, that's awesome. We're going to close it there. I can't thank you enough for being on the show. I want to thank everyone today who's been listening to the Savior Realty podcast. If you like the show, feel free to subscribe, give us a review, share it with someone you think would benefit. And until next time, we wish you all good health, God's blessings. I definitely recommend Scott and his organization. They're one of our preferred partners when we donate. Every house that we buy or remodeling job that we do, we donate to the church or charity of our customer's choice. And if a customer doesn't have one, you know, these guys are on our short list. So they did so much to help me when I was a teacher for the students and support the teachers. And they really care about the community. And they, you know, they definitely do the work, and it's a lot of work. And we appreciate you doing that and helping our communities get better, Scott. We really do.
Well, our privilege, and thank you for letting us kind of tell our story. Thank you for your support, and blessings to you.
You got it. Well, it was outstanding, and everyone else, until next time, take care and God bless.